प्रवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द 10th कैंटो श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 78 टेक्स्ट नंबर 27। चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द किलिंग ऑफ दंतवक्र एंड रोमहर्षण। एतदर्थो हि लोकेस्मिन् अवतारो मया कृतः वध्यामे धर्मध्वजिनस् ते हि पातकिनोधिकाः। एतदर्थो हि लोकेस्मिन् अवतारो मया कृता वध्यामे धर्मध्वजिनस् ते हि पातकिनोधिकाः। एतदर्थो हि लोकेस्मिन् अवतारो मया कृता वध्यामे धर्मध्वजिनस् ते हि पातकिनोधिकाः। अध्यामे धर्मध्वजिनः ते हि पातक। अवतारो मया कृतः एतदर्थो हि लोकेस्मिन् अवतारो मया कृतः एतद फॉर दिस अर्थ पर्पस ही इंडीड लोके अंटू द वर्ल्ड अस्मिन दिस अवतार डिसेंट मया बाय मी कृतः डन वध्या टू बी किल्ड मे बाय मी धर्मध्वजिना दोज हु पोज एज रिलीजियस ते दे ही इंडीड पातकिना सिंफुल अधिका मोस्ट। ट्रांसलेशन प्रपोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद डिसाइपल्स। The very purpose of my descent into this world is to kill such hypocrites who pretend to be religious. Indeed, they are the most sinful rascals. Purport. Lord Balaram was not prepared to overlook Romaharshan's offense. The Lord had descended specifically to eliminate those who claim to be great religious leaders but do not even respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead. ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभिष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं। वंदेहं श्री गुरो श्रीयुता पदकमलं శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ శ్రీరూపం సాగరజాతాం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తాం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపాదాన్ సహగణ లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానుసుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర్ శ్రీవాసాది గౌరభక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ. సో ఐ వుడ్ లైక్ టు సీక్ ద బ్లెస్సింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ హియర్ బిఫోర్ ఐ బిగిన్ స్పీకింగ్. So here we are continuing the episode of Balaramji killing Romaharshan Sut. Romaharshan, as we know, is the speaker for the assembled sages at Naimisharanya, and Balaramji arrives there and he sees how he is not offering him proper respect that is supposed to be given to a senior. And getting angry, he decides to kill him, and on the spot, on the Vyasasana. So, so in the previous purport, we saw how one might argue, the purport says, Romaharshan committed an innocent mistake when he failed to recognize Lord Balaram, but such an argument is refuted here by Lord Balaram's strong criticism. So it appears like an innocent mistake. Oh, I didn't just offer respect. Why death punishment for such a small mistake? So if we see the earlier narrations in the Bhagavatam, there are many such cases where the inability to offer respect to a superior has resulted in disastrous consequences. So here we have several histories of Indra denying to offer respect to Brihaspati, and we find how Brihaspati got offended, and then the whole story of Vritrasura pastime, Tvashta and all those demons were created, and Vritrasura was created, demigods had to lose all their opulence, and it's a big offense. One small little offense of not offering respect resulted in demigods losing their entire kingdom and position, and demons overtaking them. Then we have Indra failing to offer respect to Durvasa Muni. He just took that garland, that the Maha garland that he received from Durvasa, he gave it to the elephant, and the elephant crushed the garland, and Durvasa got offended. And then we have the whole Samudra Manthan pastime, demigods losing all their kingdom and positions, and for a long time they couldn't regain their kingdom, and then finally Vaman Dev comes and they get their position back. So several such cases, Daksha offending Lord Shiva, so many demons getting created, and Daksha had to face a severe consequence. So lack of offering respect has always resulted in serious issues. So Balaramji, now we may feel it's such a small mistake, but probably Balaramji could foresee what is going to happen if this person continues in his position and speaking on the Bhagavatam at such an elevated position. That can cause serious consequences, serious disasters, which may be very difficult to undo it. So therefore we find Balaramji killing. So the Supreme Lord is the best person who can guide, who can foresee the future and set things right in its proper place. So we need not misjudge Balaramji's action and thinking that this is something whimsical, something violation. Balaramji had in fact gone on a pilgrimage, which is a non-violent, peaceful action. But then he decides to violate that principle of non-violence, and here he feels killing here, setting this thing right, is more important, more urgent than following the pilgrimage rules and principles. And he doesn't mind killing Romaharshan and apparently committing a very inauspicious act. In the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, that section where Kamsa is persecuting the Brahmanas and other people, there Shukdev Goswami quotes this verse. Ayushriyam yasho dharmam lokan ashisha evacha hanti shreyamsi sarvani pumso mahadatikrama. When you disrespect a superior, then you face serious consequences. My dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. This is the result of offending, disrespecting a superior. So therefore, this culture of offering respect is an integral part of Vedic culture. Lord Chaitanya also is repeatedly emphasizing this principle. Amanina manadena. Not expecting respect and eager to offer respects to everyone. Only in that state of mind can we actually chant the holy names. So here in this case, Brihaspati, when he got offended, so Indra failed to offer respect and Brihaspati took offense. Although Indra apologized later for his mistake, but Brihaspati left the place, left the court, and he felt seriously offended. So even expecting respect is also can lead to serious consequences. So therefore we should be careful of following this principle seriously. So Shivaram Maharaj writes in his writings how cultivation of knowledge, if not done in the proper mood, can cover our creeper of devotion, Bhakti Lata Beej. So he writes, so transcendental knowledge, knowledge of devotional subjects, knowledge about Krishna and his energies and his pastimes is recommended for a sadhaka. But if it is done with the purpose of neglecting the conclusion of knowledge, if we acquire knowledge, read so many books without understanding the conclusion, which is what? Which is serving Krishna, service to Krishna. If that is the conclusion of acquiring knowledge, if that conclusion is missed out, if we lose focus of that conclusion, then that acquisition of knowledge is detrimental to our devotion, our bhakti. That is one. And second, he says, if we cultivate knowledge, then there is a risk of developing pride of scholarship. We may think that we are more advanced than other superiors. And in this arrogant state of mind, mind which is full of false pride, we will end up offending various devotees, and that will lead to our eventual fall down. So therefore, whenever we read books, that conclusion should not be missed, and we should not be developing a superiority complex. I am better than others. I am superior to others. That risk is always there. Prabhupada writes in that purport, if one becomes a bookworm, reading many books and scriptures, and hearing many commentaries and the instructions of many men, this will produce doubt within this heart. One cannot in this way ascertain the real goal of life. And there is this pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story of Tapan Mishra, where he has read many books. He is a great scholar. He has read many books, many commentaries, but he is unable to decide what is the objective of life, what is the goal of life. then he is directed, he gets a dream where it is said that you should go and meet Lord Chaitanya, Nimai Pandit. And then he goes and meets Lord Chaitanya, and then Lord Chaitanya instructs him about the goal of life. And later when Lord Chaitanya visits Varanasi, he's instructing Sanatan Goswami, so Tapan Mishra is allowed to sit and hear the discussion. And in that discussion, all his doubts and misconceptions are cleared. And he gets a clear picture of what is the ultimate goal of life. And Lord Chaitanya instructs him. The core practice of devotional life is chanting the holy names. That is the root of all devotional practices. So, reading too many books, too many literatures, hunting for various topics can create doubt in our mind, which is quite interesting. Otherwise, usually we feel the more we read, the more our doubts get cleared, more knowledge we get, everything becomes more clear. But not necessarily. It may not, if the attitude is not right, if our motives are material, then it may in fact create more confusion and misconceptions. Therefore, there is a nice verse Kaviraj Goswami writes in the CC. Bahu Shastre Bahu Vakye Chitte Brahma Hoy Sadhya Sadhana Shrestha Na Hoy Nishchay. If one becomes a bookworm, the same purport, one cannot in this way ascertain the real goal of life. So Prabhupada writes, Granthan Naiva Bhised Bahu Navakhyam Upayunjita. One should not read many books, nor should one try to make a profession of reciting many books, especially if one is a devotee. One must give up the ambition to be a learned scholar and in this way earn a worldly reputation and financial facilities. If one diverts his attention to reading many books, he cannot fix his mind in devotional service, nor can he understand many scriptures, for they are full of grave statements and meanings. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur writes that those who are attracted to studying many kinds of literature concerning various subjects, especially fruitive activities in philosophical speculation, are deprived of unalloyed devotional service because of their scattered attention. So this is a risk. If we read, especially now in the internet age, we get access to so many articles and books, e-books are available, so many writings are available, and we get distracted. We tend to go through everything. We want to finish reading everything and study everything and speak it in the class. That's that risk is there. So therefore we should be careful. Bhurijan Prabhu writes in his writings how in this age of Kali Yuga, the tendency is to lose respect for any superior. For example, children losing respect for their parents, students losing respect for the teachers, disciples losing respect for the guru, public in general losing respect for any authority, especially religious, spiritual authorities. This tendency is highly prominent in this age. And Kali's function is in such a way that as soon as the moment you have a certain respect for a person, Kali will expose faults and discrepancies in that role model we have. So we have respect for a certain authority, certain faults and inconsistencies in his behavior will be exposed. And then we feel, oh, should I respect him? Why should I respect him? What is the need of respecting him? And that kind of attitude develops. And in this way, whatever unity is there in a community, in a society, which is based on respect for a certain authority, that unity slowly breaks. And then it leads to quarrel and hypocrisy. And therefore it is called the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, age of rebellion, age of disunity. That is Kali's function. Therefore, it is difficult to maintain that unity in a society of devotees offering respect. So even if you don't have respect, we fake respect, at least in the beginning. We offer respect at least for his age, for his movements, amount of time spent in the movement. Some reason we need to find to offer respect. And that culture of offering respect will lead to greater respect and unity among the devotees. So therefore Prabhupada writes, and this lack of respect eventually degrades into lack of respect for the Supreme Lord. It starts with losing respect for certain people, and then eventually we lose respect for God Himself, Lord Himself. Therefore Prabhupada writes in the Gita purport how worship means to adore. This is Yoginam Api Sarvesham purport. Or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous. But one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. So, if you are disrespecting Krishna or the Supreme Lord, that means it is guaranteed that our life is going to be condemned. That's what happens here with Roma Harshan Sutta. He is disrespecting Balaramji and his life becomes condemned. Interestingly, after Roma Harshan Sutta is killed, all the sages then request Suta Goswami to ascend to take the position of in the Vyasasana, and he should continue speaking. Suta Goswami, as we know, he was a member in the audience of Parikshit Maharaj and Shukdev Goswami, and he had learned the whole Bhagavatam. So therefore the Shaunakadi rishis feel he is a qualified person to speak the Bhagavatam. And then they list out the qualities of Suta Goswami. They say, you are completely free from all vice, all malice. You are well versed in all the scriptures, famous for religious life and the Puranas and the histories as well, for we have gone through them under proper guidance and have also explained them. So Suta Goswami is a person who has shown his submissiveness, humility, all those divine qualities, and he has studied under Shukdev Goswami with the proper attitude. That attitude of humility and submissiveness is what qualifies a person to speak the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, like Roma Harshan Sutta, if we have that pride and attitude, like we see in the yesterday's verse, Adantasya vinitasya vritha panditamanina nagunaya bhavantisma natasyeva jitatmana. So everything then becomes like acting. Adanta. Adanta is one who is not self-controlled. Avinitasya. One who is not humble. No vinay, no vinita. Vritha pandita manana. He is vainly thinking that he is a scholar. He is a great learned person. Na gunaya bhavantisma. He has no good qualities. Natasyeva. He is behaving like an actor. An actor on a stage who behaves like the role he is assigned to play. So, one may be a normal, regular person, but then he may act like a king, he may act like a big minister, he may act like a businessman, whatever. He may act like a sweeper. Whatever role is assigned, that's what he plays on the stage. Similarly, a person who is not having the saintly qualities and speaking on the Vyasa is like acting, like an actor, doing the acting of a speaker, which cannot produce any transformation in the audience. So therefore, we need to be seriously cultivating these qualities. So this is one of the symptoms of a neophyte, a Kanishtha Adhikari. In the 11th canto, this verse comes, Archayam eva haraye natat bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakritasmuta. A neophyte who is new to devotion service, he respects the deity, he respects the temple environment, but fails to offer respect to devotees. He appreciates everything, but developing relationship with devotees, respecting devotees for their devotional qualifications, that is missing in such a person. Therefore, he is considered a neophyte. Whereas a Madhyama Adhikari, a person on the intermediate platform, he appreciates devotees, respects devotees, develops friendships with devotees, respects the deities, worships the deities, and firm knowledge, firm conviction about Shastric conclusions, although he may not be able to convince others. And whereas a Mahabhagavata, a person on the topmost platform, is one who doesn't see anyone as a non-devotee. He sees everyone as a devotee. What is the need to preach? That's his mentality. So therefore, not offering respect is a sign of a neophyte. Inability to offer respect to everyone is a sign of a neophyte. So therefore, Radhika Vallabhprabhu shared a nice article with me. He says, in India, in Asian countries, this culture of, especially in India, but even other Asian countries, this culture of offering respect in traditional families is highly prominent. So we have, we don't find many old age homes here. Why? Because the culture is elderly people are taken care by their sons and daughters, their grandsons and granddaughters, and they stay at home. When they get old, when they are unable to earn money, when they have finished their productive life, all they do is stay at home, retire and relax. Ideally, if it is spiritually centered home, then they develop spiritual culture, devotional practices, all those things. But the culture is, they are not left alone. The children, the next generation takes care of them. But in the West, we find how this culture is missing. It is almost lost. And the government is forced to take care of them. There is something called as social security, where the government allocates certain amount of money from their budget to take care of the elderly people, old age homes and their expenses and their medical medical needs. Everything is taken care of by the government. That's a part of their whole system. So this author was saying how in India the savings, family savings done by individual families is much more than the government has to spend. In the West, if the family starts saving, that is a big financial relief for the government. Most of about 70-80%, it says, some figure it has given. Some 11 crore US families use 120 credit and debit cards. Their total borrowings exceed $12 trillion against the current US GDP of $16 trillion. So $12 trillion spent just on these kind of needs. More than 70-75% of the amount spent on these kind of needs, which is absent in Asian countries like India, because the culture is there, culture of respecting and taking care, that is inherent in our system, and gradually we are losing that. Therefore, all these things are coming up. So in the West, you find people celebrating Father's Day, Mother's Day, which may appear attractive. Attractive people are remembering my father, their fathers and mothers. And we Indians, many times forget the birthdays. And it may appear, oh, we don't have that respect. But when the respect is offered daily and taken care of, people are taking care of them, then these small little things don't matter much. Whereas when you meet your father and mother once in a year, then it appears. So then that is a very important event. It's a celebration. It's a festival where you have to go and meet and offer a greeting card and cut a cake. All those things have to be done. So that appears to be highly attractive and highly cultured society. But the other things are hollow, which we may not perceive other times. So therefore, it says, again, respect between individual in marriages, it says 55% of the first, 67% of the second, and 74% of the third marriages end in divorce. Again, due to lack of respect and care. 60% of men and women are avoiding marriage because they feel it's such a burden thing. Burdensome. The dysfunctional traditional families and its consequence, contract-based socio-economic order, have orphaned and condemned elders, infirm and unemployed as state dependents. This is the output of unbridled individualism and its offshoot, modernity. Yet many educated Indians think that modernity means just Western dress, English language, and urban living. So, this is what is happening in our. We are losing that strong family-based values and traditions. And therefore, in the Gita, first chapter, we find Varna Sankar thing is mentioned. Arjuna is raising this argument of, if so many people are killed, then it will result in Varna Sankar population, who will then stop performing the traditional rituals and practices, and then the society will become chaotic. Therefore, he wants to avoid the war. So, Varna Sankar, then Prabhupada goes on to in great detail how Varna Sankar means they won't care about any family ritual. All they want to do is engage in uncontrolled sense gratification, which is destructive individually, socially, ecologically, in all ways. Consumerism is destructive on all levels. Especially now we find so much environmental degradation happening. It's all due to excessive consumerism. Air pollution, water pollution, food pollution, soil pollution, everything is polluted. So therefore, Shivaram Maharaj again writes interesting thing about the need to offer respect, especially in devotee communities. He says, the problem in this age, he says, is that the population is generally made of hedonists and impersonalists, whose temperaments depreciate the value of advanced devotees. The general tendency is to depreciate the value of advanced devotees, people who are spiritually more elevated. This arrogance, if not checked, induces even devotees to offend the very Vaishnavas who first aroused their ecstasy. Since such offenses greatly displeases the Lord's internal potency, she quickly withdraws. Bhakti Devi withdraws even the semblance of devotion, semblance of attachment from these offenders. Prabhupada explains that offenses afflict the devotee's attachment to Krishna in proportion to the severity of the offense. In the Nectar of Devotion, he writes, if the offense is very serious, then one's attachment becomes almost nil, almost zero. And if the offense is not very serious, one's attachment can become second class or third class. So we all have some attachment to Krishna. That attachment becomes second class, third class, or almost zero, depending on the seriousness of the offense. So devotees must not only guard against committing offenses, any offense will result in reduction of attachment to the process, reduction in enthusiasm, reduction in eagerness to serve. So therefore, we should be careful. Any, whether it's a junior, middle class, senior, whoever the devotee is, any offense will result in our attachment getting reduced. Devotees who disrespect or mistreat Vaishnavas reduce or destroy the very taste that sustains their Krishna consciousness. Unprotected from the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance, offenders invariably succumb to their lower nature. They then either abandon the path of devotion altogether or compromise their life's goal for some form of mixed devotion. So initially they were performing pure devotion. After offense, because their attachment is reduced, they then practice a brand of spirituality which is mixed with some material desire. It's called bhakti abhas, like namabhas. For devotees once committed to the path of pure devotion, this is indeed a fall down. Therefore, devotees must exercise extreme caution and discrimination in their dealings with other Vaishnavas. They should especially resist, this is interesting, they should especially resist the temptation to pass judgment on others, lest they inadvertently commit Vaishnava Aparadha. For instance, devotees are prone to project their own level of advancement unto all members of the society. Such persons can be heard saying something like, let's be honest amongst ourselves, all devotees in ISKCON are neophytes. This is a tendency, this is a remark we make usually. Many people may remark like this, if they are affected by the tendency to commit aparadha. Or overreacting to a devotee with a different style of Krishna consciousness than their own. someone is practicing not the standard way of bhakti, then we may accuse him of deviation or self-aggrandizement. Such careless criticism diminishes the critic's own spiritual prowess and hence their own ability to recognize advanced devotees. So this is something we need to be extremely, especially as a growing society. We have all levels of devotees, from a neophyte, beginner, practitioner, till the advanced devotees who may be actually developing extracting symptoms, which may not be, they may not be displaying it in public, and we may think they are ordinary devotees, and eventually we may end up offending them and destroying our own creeper of devotion. So therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Swarup Damodar Goswami makes this point. When we hear Mayavad philosophy, hearing of philosophy that says you are God, everyone is God, that philosophy can cause serious damage to our devotional creeper. Even advanced devotees who hear such kind of philosophy will lose interest, will lose their enthusiasm to continue the practice of bhakti. In the Leelamrit, Prabhupada Leelamrit, you find the story of Prabhupada taking serious action against four devotees in the early days of the movement. Four devotees who thought that we have done a big offense by not recognizing Prabhupada as Krishna. They thought Prabhupada is Krishna and we failed to recognize Prabhupada, and therefore we have done a big offense. And Prabhupada learned about this, he immediately expelled them from the society and said, they should ban them from society. And later they forgave, they begged forgiveness and Prabhupada forgave them, and they were again taken into the movement. But the danger is, the point is how hearing deviant philosophies and such kind of ideologies can make us lose our enthusiasm. Especially, Prabhupada used to heavily condemn Sahajiya mentality, because they are appreciating Krishna's name, Naam, Roop, Guna, Leela, all those pastimes, but they don't practice the principles, practice the regulative principles. Similarly, anyone who is within the movement, someone may be practicing the principles strictly, but they may be deviating from the philosophy. Like in this translation we find, dharma dvajinas. The purpose of my descent into this world is to kill such hypocrites who pretend to be religious. Pretentious religion is more dangerous than someone who is outright materialist or a demon. If someone is a demonic atheist, we understand, oh, this person has no interest in devotional life, we avoid them. But someone who is appearing to be practicing all principles strictly, austerity and all those principles, but the philosophical the thought process, the ideology he is having is deviant, his philosophy is deviant, then that can cause greater damage. Those people are more dangerous than people who are outrightly materialistic or atheistic. So Balaramji is saying, that is the purpose of my descent, to kill such people. So your Romaharshan Sutta is appearing like a devotee, but his attitude and mood is not the best, not proper. So therefore Balaramji decides to kill him. So I'll stop here. Any comments or any questions anyone has?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, you said about the consequences of not respecting devotees. So in NOI it is said that one should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service. So how do we apply this in day two, like in the temple when we come? At least when we are outside, we don't come across many devotees. But in the temple, there are so many devotees. And to mentally honor someone, it's comparatively easy. But offer obeisances to each and every devotee would become a little difficult. Because obviously, because they all are initiated. So how do we apply this?
Therefore, we have the practice. No? As soon as we enter into the temple hall, we offer obeisances. Because it is impractical to offer obeisance to each and every devotee. So we offer in the common, together, in one obeisance, we offer respects to everyone, whoever is present in the temple hall. That is valid. That is acceptable. You are offering respect together to everyone. Individually, it may not be a practical thing all the time. Unless some senior devotee enters and then some sannyasi enters, then we offer individual respect to that person. Otherwise, there is a common one obeisance to all, and that is acceptable. Is that okay?
Proji, like it said that even if you are not feeling respectful, we should act respectfully. They said it like fake it till you make it. But there is also the idea for some people that Krishna consciousness should not be artificial imposition. If it comes naturally, let it grow slowly, slowly, naturally. So like I prefer the later one. So in that case, how to understand the contradiction of these two types of...
Prabhupada gives the example of a child learning to walk. So ability to walk is there inherent in the child. But practice is needed. The parents help him, the elders help him, friends help him. So gradually that ability of walking becomes natural. So it's there, everything one has. Bhakti is natural. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema is there naturally in everyone's heart. But help is needed to bring it, revive it. Because conditionings are so much that it may not happen automatically. Bhakti is natural, but it is not. We have to strive for it. We need to work for it. Only then the natural state can be revived. Otherwise, conditionings are always bombarding upon us. It will cover us, cover our creeper of devotion. Weeds will keep growing, and then all those things will cover. So we need to strive. That's not artificial. By the practice of regulative principles, as explained by Rupa Goswami in the intro, the 64 limbs of devotion, those are recommended processes. It's not something artificial imposition on the mind. Okay. Jaya Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.